Against a background of the hills and streetlights of Los Angeles, searchlights illuminate a huge Art Deco sign of sculpted letters that spell out 20th Century Fox, a News Corporation company. A slash of blue and white light carves out the letter R, the logo of Regency. A young man standing on top of the Sphinx's head, with the pyramids of Giza behind him, gazes out towards the pale yellow sun on the distant horizon.
Let me tell you about my day so far. Coffee in Paris, surfed the Maldives, took a little nap on Mount Kilimanjaro. Oh yeah, and I got digits from this Polish chick in Rio. And then I jumped back for the final quarter of the NBA Finals, courtside of course, and all that was before lunch. I could go on, but all I'm saying is, I'm standing on top of the world.
In flashback, he's sitting in class listening to a bearded teacher.
It wasn't always like this. Once I was a normal person. A chump, just like you.
The teenager comes up to a petite brunette who's putting on a white scarf.
Hey, Millie.
Oh, hey, David.
Millie's locker door is plastered with photos of European cities.
You got a lot of cities there.
You're gonna have a dream. Might as well dream big, right?
Right.
Later.
Outside in the snowy grounds of the school, Millie's in a huddle of students waiting to board the school bus. David, with his hood pulled up and holding something round wrapped in paper, ventures towards her.
Hey, Millie.
She turns to face him and he smiles at her shyly.
Hey.
As she comes towards him, he lowers his eyes even more shyly.
I wanted to give you this. I picked it up at a yard sale in Plymouth and I thought you'd really like it.
She unwraps the small bundle and takes out a glass globe with a tiny Eiffel Tower inside it.
It's a little dinged up and it's missing a few steps, but...
Millie smiles appreciatively.
I love it.
You
do? I do.
Holy crap, rice ball!
Mark.
Hey, what's this?
Mark, Christmas come early?
Mark.
Give
Holy
it back
crap.
To her.
Look what David
Mark.
Got, Millie!
Mark, come on,
you guys
stop.
Like the Eiffel Tower?
Mark.
Wow, if you really shake this thing hard enough,
Mark,
you can hear the Eiffel Tower move,
stop.
I swear to God. Hey, who wants to get a shake?
Hey, that's enough. Stop it. Just give it back.
All right. Okay. Sorry, here.
Mark holds out the snow globe to David, but then tosses it in the snow.
Sorry, buddy. Guess I don't know my own strength.
The globe lands on top of a frozen river, covered with a thin coating of snow, with the spire of the Eiffel Tower facing downwards, like an unfurled umbrella.
David? Just forget about it.
Come on, rice ball, don't be stupid.
David, come back. Come on, just let it go. It's okay. Stop, it's not worth it. Just come back, please.
David steps onto the frozen river.
Come on, David.
He picks up the globe.
Be careful, come on.
All good, see?
Great, now come back.
David!
Millie, don't go out there!
David plunges down into the freezing water. The current propelling him backwards.
David, get help!
Somewhere,
help!
In the water, David struggles to reach the frozen surface.
David!
Millie looks on helplessly as David doesn't reappear. In a gush of water, he's washed up on his belly in what looks like a library. A man peers at David from the end of an aisle as he lies in a pile of scattered books. David looks around him in bewilderment, flips open a folder, and reads the name of the library.
And that's how it happened the first time. One second, I'm a goner, and the next thing I know, I'm at the Ann Arbor Public Library.
He leaves, clutching the glass globe in his hand. A public bus deposits him in a deserted residential street of rundown houses covered in snow. He trudges along with his hands in his pockets, his wispy brown fringe plastered across his forehead.
Home sweet home. Mom left when I was 5. As for Dad, well, let's just say he wasn't much of one.
You're late. Supper's cold.
His father's sitting in front of the TV, nursing a beer.
Where you been, anyway?
David walks across the floor, his feet squelching with each step.
Dad, you know when I ask a question, I expect an answer, okay? Hey. What happened to you?
Just kids at school.
Hey, David, get back down here. Get a mop and clean this crap up. David!
David puts a chain across his bedroom door and sits on his bed.
It's the right choice! David! Open the door!
His father bursts in and finds the room empty. David lands on his back in the same aisle of the Ann Arbor Library. The dark-eyed teenager sits up in total bafflement, surrounded on all sides by tall stacks of books.
Just teleport.
He spots one book called Escape to Your Library.
Right. Teleport to the library.
This time the lights are off and the aisles have been roped off with notices saying that stacks are closed due to water damage. David comes to a metal security grill separating the book section from the rest of the building. As he tries to find a way out, he's pushed by a powerful force, teleporting him back to his bedroom. He looks about him, still baffled, then closes the bedroom door. He crosses to his window and sees his dad remonstrating with a couple of police officers in the street below.
And that's when it occurred to me, this thing that just happened, it could set me free.
He reaches for a roll of money from a secret hiding place, then starts throwing some clothes on his bed. In the drawer, there's a photo of his mother with her arms around him when he was little.
And if she could run away, so could I.
Bitterly, he slams the drawer shut. Okay. In her upstairs bedroom, young Millie is being comforted by her mother, who strokes her daughter's head and leaves the room. Millie draws her cuddly, floppy-eared toy dog to her chest and sobs. She looks up at a sound coming from outside and crosses over to the window. In the front garden, her swing is swaying gently back and forth. She hurries out into the snow in her pajamas and makes her way to the front of the house, towards the swing. As she comes close to it, she slows down. There on the seat of the swing is David's glass globe. She cradles it in her hands and looks out into the darkness with a hopeful smile.
I wanted to tell her everything.
David? David?
I mean, who would have believed me anyway?
David?
I figured it was time to move on.
David rides in a bus across a tall iron bridge towards New York City. His eyes shine excitedly as he looks through the bus window at the gleaming river and the city skyline beyond. Wearing a woolly hat and a gray overcoat, he looks up at the neon sign of a cheap downtown hotel, a New Regency Hypnotic production. A Doug Liman film starring Hayden Christensen, Jamie Bell, and Samuel L. Jackson.
I'd like a room.
You're not gonna be any trouble, are you? No weird stuff?
Nope. No weird stuff.
The title, Jumper, jumps onto the screen. David lets himself into an upstairs room and hurriedly closes the door. He switches on the light and looks around the dingy room as if it were a palace, with Rachel Bilson, Michael Rooker, and Diane Lane.
And so there I was. I had a million questions. Like, how does this thing work? How do I control it?
In broad daylight, he sits on a low rock in Central Park, his hands on his knees, his face frowning in concentration. Anna Sophia Robb, Max Hero, and Jesse James. He focuses on a tree some 30 feet away. He vanishes and reappears, colliding with the tree and falling heavily to the leaf-strewn ground. Hurriedly, he gets to his feet, brushing the leaves and dust from his coat, and making sure no one's looking, he teleports again. He reappears on the rocky outcrop where he started. Later, he flips through a travel guide of New York. He comes to a picture of the Statue of Liberty and squeezes his eyes, but nothing happens. He flips through some more pages to a photo of the Empire State Building.
Been there.
Mommy, Mommy, you can see the ocean and everything.
If we're lucky, maybe we'll see King Kong.
Really? You got me?
Oh, I got you. I'm not letting you go.
Mary wraps her arms tightly around 5-year-old David. In his hotel room, the pages of the guidebook flip wildly. He looks bewildered as debris crashes around him. He lands heavily on the observation deck of the Empire State Building. With the wind flapping at his hood, he seems disoriented. He comes to the entrance of the Emigrant Savings Bank.
I was 15. Come on, what would you have done? I figured I'd pay it back someday.
Clocking the armed security guards inside the bank, He strolls in through the revolving door and walks up to a guard.
Is there a bathroom for customers?
The guard eyes him up and down, then leads him down some stairs. Walking past some heavy iron bars, David watches the bank vault being shut.
Hey, it's this way.
Yeah.
Make it quick.
No problem. Thanks.
Back in his room, he sweeps a hammer and a spanner from the bed, wrapping them in a sack with his black gloved hand, and pulls his hood over his woolly hat. Holding his hoodie by the collar, he stands with his torch pointing in front of him and concentrates. In a cloud of dust and falling ceiling plaster, he teleports himself into the bank's customer washroom and grimaces with frustration. A second later, he's in the vault, shining his torch at the locked safety deposit boxes. Backing up against the iron bars enclosing the vault, he shines his torch at the stacks of cash behind each metal gate. With a gleeful grin, he opens up one container and starts to load up the canvas bag.
I'm gonna need a bigger bag.
He concentrates hard and teleports back to his room, whipping the sheet off the bed. Then he's back with a sheet full of money, which he tips onto the bed and vanishes again. The walls of the room shudder, and he's back with another sack full of cash, which he tips out all over the floor, carpeting the room with banknotes. He stands over the bed with a look of total amazement.
Holy shit.
Grinning from ear to ear, he throws himself on the bed. The burly hotel manager stomps up to David's door.
Hey! I said no weird stuff! Let's go, 2 days' rent, you owe me rent! Hello? Hello?
Some dollar bills slide through the gap at the foot of the door. Next day, outside the bank, a tall black man with cropped white hair gets out of a car. He strides towards the front door. Inside, a manager hurriedly runs towards him as the tall black man in a pale gray raincoat approaches the brass inner doors.
The police and the FBI have already been through here. Who are you with?
NSA.
They couldn't make heads or tails of it. The vault has a time lock, pressure mounts, steel plates. This guy didn't even
open
the
door.
We didn't know we were robbed until halfway through the day.
I want the security tapes for the whole month. And I need the name of everyone who has a safety deposit box in that vault.
Now, that's confidential. Why do you need those names?
Whoever robbed your vault has been in it before. And I want those names, and I want those tapes. Today.
15-year-old David, lying on his bed, picks up a wad of cash, gives it a cursory glance, and puts it to one side. He finishes a beer, crushes the can, and tossing it across the room, lies back with his hands behind his head, surrounded by his money. Time passes, and he's in his 20s, lying on his back in bed.
So the story had a happy ending. Rice Bowl was dead, but I had never been more alive.
One wall of his apartment is plastered with photos.
So now I'm living in New York. But why settle in one place when you can have the whole world?
Instead of using his spiral staircase, he jumps to his luxury kitchen. Then across to the fridge, also smothered in travel photos. He reaches in for a drink and jumps to the sofa, putting his feet up on a coffee table. With the TV remote just out of his reach, he jumps towards it and points it at the TV.
It's closer to the river, but as you can see, this flood became more severe about 10 minutes ago. The question now, Pat, is what will happen to these people? It would take a miracle to get to them.
Dark-haired and handsome, David raises a lazy eyebrow and shrugs, biting into a snack. He jumps back to the fridge and vanishes, reappearing in a room with floor-to-ceiling shelving packed with clothes and money. He picks up a wad and jumps back to his swanky open-plan penthouse living room, full of expensive boys' toys. He has a red postbox in one corner and two PCs next to each other. He slips on a grey coat, snatches up an umbrella, and teleports to the lobby of his apartment building.
Good afternoon, Mr. Jones.
David addresses the porter.
How they doing?
Down by 6 at the half. Don't think you'll be needing that umbrella.
You never know.
He goes out through the door of the swanky building and teleports to a city at night, in front of one of the 4 great clock faces of Big Ben, to be precise. And the time is just after 8:30. Grinning to himself, he puts up the umbrella as he peers down on the city of Westminster. Jumping to a street, he lowers the umbrella and walks into a busy bar. He hangs the umbrella on a hook. With his short brown wavy hair and clean-cut features, he looks around with an amused smile. He clocks a luscious blonde sat at the bar. She spots him and bats her eyelashes coyly. He jumps to her.
Watch it!
You mind if I join you?
Hello. What can I get you?
What are you drinking?
Gin and tonic.
Tanqueray and tonic. Two of them, please.
A young guy with unruly, mousy hair watches David closely.
So, you live in London?
David grins at the blonde.
Taxi!
He flags down a cab and the long-haired girl gets in. Shooting a look over his shoulder towards the door of the bar, David climbs into the cab. In a house somewhere in a quiet street, David stands bare-chested at the window of an upstairs room, gazing out at the rain. Behind him, the girl lies in bed asleep. He turns to look at her and jumps to her side. He walks across a boatyard, jumps into a sailing shop, reaches for a wetsuit, then he looks above his head at a sleek blue and white surfboard. Now he's lying on the board in calm seawater with other surfers.
Dude, this totally sucks. Hey, I thought this is where the storm was supposed to hit.
I heard it hit Fiji.
Fiji, huh?
Yeah, they got like 30-foot swells.
Really?
With a surge of foam behind him, he rides a monster wave off the island of Fiji, slicing through the water like a knife through butter, till the wave sends him flying. Now he's in a camping chair in a t-shirt and shorts, biting into a sandwich, his street clothes and surfboard lie next to him, on top of the Sphinx's head. As the vista opens out, David becomes just a tiny white speck sitting on the flat head of the Sphinx, with the three shadowy pyramids of Giza dominating the horizon behind him. An aerial view of a placid river lined with palm trees, snaking through jungle terrain. Beneath the jungle canopy, there's a flash of dynamite. Someone falls into a trap and is hoisted up onto a tree. On the shadowy jungle floor, a man and a woman hurriedly shut the lid of a box of equipment. The white-haired black man strides through a dark clearing, with a machete in his hand, towards the trapped boy, hanging from a tree trunk.
Okay. Why?
Because you are an abomination. Only God should have the power to be all places at all times.
The dark-haired boy trembles in terror as the hunter plunges the blade into his victim's stomach and twists it. The boy looks into the eyes of his executioner, who doesn't flinch. With gritted teeth, he draws the blade downwards. The boy's head lulls lifelessly.
One less of you to worry about.
Cut him down! Let's get the hell out of here.
The white-haired killer answers his mobile.
Yeah.
We have a lead on the bank, sir.
I'll be on the next plane.
In New York City at night, David in his gray coat, white shirt, and gray slacks comes back into his building.
Hey, Angelo, how'd they do?
Not so good. Tell you when we need that umbrella.
Yeah, you were right.
David gets into the lift with a look of calm nonchalance and shakes out his coat pocket. In his penthouse, he starts taking off his coat, then notices that his PCs are switched off.
Don't run.
He looks up at the raised gallery where he keeps his wall of photos.
8 years we've been looking for you.
The white-haired man comes down the spiral staircase.
And who are you?
My name's Roland.
What are you doing in my apartment?
Oh, we'll get to that.
David watches warily as Roland picks up a sheaf of papers. One of them has IOU written on it.
What kind of crook leaves a note?
I think I need to talk to my lawyers.
Why? You're not under arrest.
You mean you're not the...
Police? Anybody can rob a bank. What I'd like to know is how you rob a bank without opening any doors. Come on. I'm sure you can think of something.
Look, if you're not the police and not under arrest, I think I'd like you to leave.
David goes to the door and struggles with the lock.
You need some help with that?
Roland picks up a thin oboe-like baton.
Been a while since you used a door, huh?
David slowly turns to face him.
Oh, I know who you are. And I know what you are.
This conversation's over.
Roland zaps him.
This conversation's not over. Do you answer my question?
He kicks David in the stomach. David tries to jump, but Roland zaps him with more electricity.
How'd you last this long, huh? Who's helping you?
David raises his eyes to his picture gallery and jumps there.
Jumpers.
Roland moves menacingly towards the spiral staircase. David tries to focus on a photo of the Charles Bridge in Prague.
Kinda hard to jump with 1,000 volts of electricity passing through your brain, huh?
Roland leaps up onto the gallery and zaps David again.
Who's protecting you? Give me an answer so I can go home. I hate jumpers.
He hurls David over the railing onto an armchair, then vaults after him, but David jumps out of the way. Roland shoots a line from a second baton, which tightens around David's ankle, like trapping an animal by its leg.
You think you could go on like this forever? Living like this with no consequences?
Roland slams his baton into the floor.
There are always consequences.
David brings some silver ornaments tumbling to the floor, but is still caught up in the line.
Where are you going, huh?
I got you now.
David vanishes. Roland scowls at the line stretching to and through the wall to his secret chamber.
You think you can hide behind a wall, go anywhere, do anything? Not anymore!
David desperately grabs an armful of money as Roland punches his fist through the paper-thin wall. He bursts into the secret room, flashes his fake ID, and David jumps. He lands in his old bedroom. His dad, William, watching TV, sees the dining room ceiling shake.
David! David! Hey, you! David! Hey, David! Don't go! Don't go! Just hear me out, okay? David, I don't know if I'm going crazy here or not. All right, I don't know a lot of things these days. But if you can hear me, just wait, David! Don't go! I gotta talk to you!
As William runs for the key to unlock the padlock on the door, David picks up his bags of money.
David, if you can hear me, son, it's okay. You can come home anytime you want.
David moves towards the partly open door as William fiddles with the padlock.
You're not crazy.
William bursts in, but David is gone. In David's penthouse, Roland makes a call.
Telecommunications.
This is Roland. He got away. We have his jump sites. I want everybody up and running. Everybody.
In daylight, David is sitting on the railing of the Ann Arbor Water Tower. He looks down at the leafy streets below and jumps. He turns to see some young women walking towards a car. Then he spots William coming down the steps of his house in his work clothes, sipping from a mug. David concentrates on him and lowers his eyes. William walks over to his truck and, sensing something, looks up but sees nothing. In David's secret room, Roland is looking through some photographs. At the back of a jewelry drawer, he finds one of Millie.
This.
In Ann Arbor, David wanders past the swing in Millie's front garden and goes towards the front of the house. He climbs the porch steps and takes a deep breath. A slim, middle-aged woman comes to the door.
May I help you?
Yeah. Hi, Mrs. Harris. It's me, David.
David? David Rice? Millie was right. You're not...
Dead. Yeah, no. I'm not.
Millie's mother flings her arms around him.
Actually, I was hoping you could tell me where to find Millie.
Millie? She's got her own place over on Morton, number 260.
She's still here?
Yeah, uh-huh. She works at Houlihan's Bar down by the campus.
That's it, that's it!
The bar is packed with American football fans watching a game on a big screen. David is sitting in a booth staring across the room at a pretty brunette behind the bar.
Millie, need those pitchers.
Millie hands over two beers with a faintly bored expression. David sips his beer, toying nervously with the bottle.
Okay, you saw her.
He picks up his holdall and crosses the crowded bar. At the top of some stairs, a young guy about his age gives him a curious look.
Holy crap, rice ball? Oh, Mark! Mark Coble!
Sorry, man. I don't know you.
Jesus Christ, am I seeing a ghost? Is this some kind of sixth sense shit?
I don't know what you're talking about, okay?
Hey, everybody, it's Rice Bowl! Come on.
Don't you want to grab a beer with an old buddy from high school?
I'm not this David.
He turns around to find Minnie standing right behind him.
Yo, what's the rice cake?
You?
Hi. You were gonna leave without saying anything?
Sorry, I didn't see you.
No? Weren't you just up there staring at me for the past 45 minutes?
Yeah, David. Why didn't you say something, huh?
I think you're drunk.
I'm not drunk, okay? I'm cool. I am totally 110% cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. Why don't you go find a bench and sleep it off, okay?
Why don't you? You'll make me a drink, sweetheart, huh?
A little splash of that.
David sucks Mark in the jaw. The fight moves outside.
Mark! Stop it! Come on, you guys! Stop!
Rice ball goes down!
David rugby tackles Mark. They both go flying through a wooden fence and are teleported to an unlit bank vault. David gets to his feet, nodding to himself with a look of satisfaction. Mark backs away in terror.
What did you do to me? Break?
David, wearing a slow grin, bends down to him.
Guess I don't know my own strength.
He vanishes, leaving Mark in the dark. In the bar garden, Millie is looking round anxiously. She goes towards the fence the men broke through, and David appears in front of her.
Hey. You okay?
Yeah.
Where's Mark?
He took off.
What?
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna come back anytime soon.
Oh.
She touches David's cheek with a look of concern.
Bleeding a little. You should take care of that. Come on.
He follows her with a dopey smile and takes a seat at the bar. Millie puts some ice cubes into a dishcloth.
So you saw me as soon as I came in?
Maybe.
I didn't know what to say.
About, hi, hello, been a long time. How are you?
Hi.
Hello, been a long time. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Let me skip this boring stuff.
You know, I didn't think I'd still be here.
Where else would I be?
You had those lists, right? I don't know, you were gonna go travel the world.
She hands him a beer.
Things change. We all need to grow up, right? So what do you do?
Banking. I'm in banking.
You're in banking? How'd you get into that?
It's pretty easy, actually. Just sort of landed in it.
Didn't you flunk algebra?
No.
Fiona, I'm gonna take my break now. Yeah, sure.
The mousy-haired guy from the London pub is watching her.
So, you're back. What now? What's your plan?
Maybe gonna do some traveling. Was thinking of maybe checking out Rome, actually.
Millie gives David a long look.
You were thinking of checking out Rome? Come on, you know that was my dream. Don't try to rip me off, okay?
So come with me.
So come with you? You're asking me to go to Rome?
I mean, only if you want to skip the boring parts.
His blue eyes meet her brown eyes, and he flashes her a slow, sexy smile. Their plane flies over the sprawling city of Rome towards the Pantheon and the wedding cake monument of Victor Emmanuel, past two classical church domes. Their cab pulls up in a rainy square outside a Swiss hotel, and they're greeted by a porter dressed in a cool black suit.
Don signore, benvenuto.
Millie gets out, looking very excited. David grabs his holdall.
I got it.
I'll take it. Thank you.
As you like it.
Can you believe just 10 hours ago we were in Ann Arbor?
Yeah.
They go on into the hotel in New York.
What does the CIA want with this?
I'm afraid that's classified.
Really? Well, then I'm afraid I'm gonna have to see a federal warrant.
Because I don't believe you are who you say you are.
Certainly.
Roland knocks the man out cold and picks up a police file. He comes into a cell with a two-way window and a camera set up on a tripod. Mark is sitting at the interrogation table.
Great. Another cop.
Roland switches off the camera and moves it out of the way.
So, Mark, tell me what happened at the bank.
I told them already. You're just another suit. You're never going to believe me.
Says here you were beamed into the vault.
You want to laugh about it? Go ahead. Have a laugh.
Roland leans towards him and fixes him with his big round eyes.
You hear me laughing?
The girl's name is Millie Harris. She boarded a plane to Rome 16 hours ago, and she didn't go alone.
Millie stands at a door leading onto the balcony of their palatial hotel as David tips a porter. He puts down his holdall and, picking up an apple, turns to face Millie, who has her back to him.
So, what do you think?
I think there's something you're not telling me.
What do you mean?
This room. First class. Usually in my life, when things seem too good to be true, it's because they are.
I told you, I'm in banking.
Banking. See, I know that you flunked algebra. David, if you don't want to tell me everything, that's fine. Just don't lie to me.
I'm not lying to you.
He holds her gaze steadily. She peers at him, still looking doubtful. But he doesn't flinch.
Good.
Tilting her head to one side, she smiles coquettishly and plants a light kiss on his cheek. A look of guilt flashes across his face. A little later, he follows her through to the dressing room, where she's struggling to hang up a black evening dress on a clothes hanger that's a bit too high for her. He moves towards her and they stand looking at each other for a moment, with him towering over her. They kiss each other shyly. She cups his face in her hands and pulls him to her. He tears off his hoodie. She pulls up her black top. He picks her up in his arms. And they kiss again. Millie lies back on the bed, and as David struggles to pull off her boots, they both fall onto the floor. Later, they walk arm in arm through Rome and sit at a pavement cafe. He gives her another goofy smile. Later, they take a cab to the Colosseum. David gazes at Minnie like a lovesick puppy as they walk towards the Arch of Constantine.
You know, this is always the number one on my list.
I know.
You must be pretty good at this, huh?
Good at what?
She gives him a playful, questioning grin. Sitting on top of the arch is the unruly-haired guy from the pub and the bar.
Rookie. No idea.
Whoa, wait.
Sorry, sir. Sorry. No.
What?
No, it's impossible. It's closed.
Closed?
Yes.
What do you mean it's closed? How is it closed? No, see, we just want to go inside there.
It's impossible.
It's the Colosseum. How's it closed?
It's impossible.
David, it's okay. I got to see it from outside. It's good enough.
You know, she came all this way to go inside.
Hey, come on. Sorry, he's,
Bye. Millie walks around the perimeter wall of the ancient monument, past the barriers the security guards had put there.
Millie! Come on.
What?
Come on. How about a private tour?
It's closed. We can't break into the Colosseum.
Who said it's closed? The door was open. You want to see the Colosseum or not?
She hovers uneasily by the open gate of one of the arches.
Come on.
We still should not be doing it.
David leads her by the hand past the monolithic columns that support the outer structure of the arena. They hurry towards the center, the afternoon sun bathing the upper tiers of what's left of the wall in its golden light. Millie looks around her with a delighted smile.
This place is amazing.
I want you to see this. Gotta admit, it's worth the risk.
She walks towards the railing that overlooks the exposed dungeon level of the Colosseum, 160 feet across.
It's so cool.
It is.
David can't take his eyes off her.
Down here's where they used to keep the gladiators and the lions, the cages.
We should go down there.
Can't go down there. It's off limits. Even when it's open.
Nothing's off limits.
What?
David jumps and opens another door from inside.
Millie!
Is that door just open too?
It's open now.
Yeah.
I don't want to see this. Trust me.
With a wary smile, Millie goes through the door and starts down the stone steps towards the lower level. They come upon a marble statue wrapped in polythene.
Bet you that's worth something.
David goes to a door with a no-entry sign on it and tries the door handle.
I think he's telling you do not enter.
You speak Italian?
Nope.
Well, l'ingresso means come on in.
Oh, I thought I meant bullshit.
Well, no, that means that you should stay here while I go around and open it from the other side. It's all right, you'll catch on.
He kisses her softly, tearing himself away from her with difficulty. Leaping over the railing, he jumps to the lowest level and takes a bow three times.
Thank you very much. Next showing will be at 6 o'clock.
He strolls down the center of the arena between two long stone walls that dwarf him. As he looks up, he spots the spiky-haired guy in his leather jacket sitting on a high wall.
Oh, what? A little busy here? Yeah, I can see that. Never mind.
Looking unsettled, David hurries off. The stranger follows him with a baseball bat.
Yeah, I wouldn't open that door if I were you. Not if I wanted my girlfriend to keep breathing, I wouldn't. But that's just me. What are you gonna do anyway? You gonna bring her down and have a nice little romantic picnic? Nice little tea party? Is that what you think is gonna happen?
You so much as look at her.
Well, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna jump me where?
The stranger vanishes and reappears.
Did you think you were the only one? You really have no idea, do you? You lead the life you live, you think you can just go on a little Roman holiday and they wouldn't notice. Just jump all over the place, jump. And nothing's gonna happen. But they've noticed. Not me. I mean, I already knew, not me, it's not talking about me, but them. Down there.
He points to the other end of the arena at two men appearing out of an archway carrying metal cases.
Oh, boys.
David jumps. Griffin, the British jumper, shrugs.
Just me, then.
A baton flies out of one of the cases.
What's new?
One of the men fires. Griffin jumps. David's caught in a lasso and yanked down to the floor of the Colosseum. The jumper hunter demolishes a statue with his weapon. Millie hears the shooting through the closed door.
What into the war?
Griffin vanishes. The two hunters run through the arena, brandishing their batons. Griffin appears and disappears above their heads.
Just let me know if you guys are getting tired.
Close.
David?
David wriggles out of the lasso, only to be felled by another.
What's going on?
Griffin whacks the hunter with his baseball bat and takes him hostage.
Right, let's meet the girlfriend, shall we?
David intercepts him. Griffin sends the hunter crashing into a wall and falling down to the base level. He ambushes the second man and hurls him to the ground next to David. Griffin rolls the first man over with his foot and kicks him for good measure.
Who are these people?
Paladins. Paladins kill jumpers. I kill paladins. Class dismissed.
A Colosseum guide runs in.
Oh, mio Dio! Cosa sta facendo? Polizia! Polizia! Polizia!
Griffin grabs his victim and jumps.
Wait!
David jumps after him and crash lands into his room. There are photos pinned to the wall and DVDs in a case.
I just came through your jump scar. What do you think you're doing here? Huh? If I were you, I'd jump right back. You're not supposed to see all this stuff. You're not supposed to be here. Get out. So if you'd like to kindly fuck off. As in now.
Maybe your girlfriend's still alive.
David jumps, reappearing on the other side of a locked door. He comes through it and shuts it.
What happened to you?
Nothing. Let's go, come on. I think we should just get out of here.
That didn't sound like nothing.
You were right, okay? I shouldn't have gone down there.
David,
everything's fine. Come on, we can still make the museum.
Hand in hand, they hurry out through the barred gate, David keeping his head low as the Roman guide talks to police.
Must
please?
Be a cab around here somewhere.
Wait, why aren't you talking to me? Will you please just talk to me?
Look, I'll tell you everything back at the hotel, okay?
I'm not waiting for the hotel.
Look, Millie, it's all fine, okay? It's just,
no,
you know,
it's not all fine.
I wasn't supposed to go back then.
Two carabinieri step out in front of David.
No confirmed there.
Eravate nel Colosseo.
Nah, I think you guys made a mistake.
Be quiet.
You're looking for that guy over there,
yeah?
I know we weren't. Look, I'm sorry. I know I wasn't supposed to be back there, okay?
You're looking for me.
Can't you just let us off with a warning? Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, okay.
David is handcuffed.
Maybe just go back to the hotel, okay?
Eravate nel Colosseo.
No. We're not together.
I'm with him.
I don't know her.
Okay, come
really, go back to the hotel.
He's bundled into a squad car and taken to a police station.
I told you. I want to see Millie.
Where is the body?
I didn't do anything, okay? I don't know how many times you want me to tell you the same thing.
Millie taps on a window in the police waiting room.
Do you know how much longer he's going to be back there?
We wait for Magistrato.
Yeah, I know. We've been waiting for Magistrato all night.
Senti, calmati e aspetta.
I don't speak your... I don't know what you're saying.
Now you sit, or we seat you.
Okay, I
seat. Seat.
I seat.
She's got nothing to do with this.
Ferro, il magistrato arrivato.
Okay, va bene. Allora, the magistrate is here. We will hold on to your passport. Don't worry. You won't need it where you're going.
David scowls at the police detective. He bangs the chair with his fist in frustration. A fair-haired woman in grey comes into the room. He turns to look at her.
Hello, David. You've only got about 30 seconds before they come through that door. Do you understand? You have to get out of here.
She drops a key on the desk.
Ditch the girl. If she's with you, she's dead.
Mom! Mom!
20 seconds, David.
He struggles after her, with the chair that he was sitting on still handcuffed to his wrist. He grabs the police detective and teleports them both to the top of the Sphinx's head, floodlit against the darkness, and unlocks the handcuff. Ben comes running down the steps of the police station towards Millie.
Hold on.
They hug each other.
Free to walk.
They just let you go?
They just let me go.
Just like that?
Just like that.
He hurries her out of the station.
They just let you go. Why are we running?
Well, she really strongly suggested that we leave town now.
What did they say to you?
Ask me some questions.
For 8 hours?
They had a lot of questions.
I really want to trust you. You're making it extremely difficult.
All right, so trust me. Let's go.
He sprints across the road to a taxi.
Whoa!
And knocks on the driver's window.
Whoa. Hey. You take us? Yeah? Get in the cab. Millie, get in the car. Please, please get in the cab.
Millie looks at him reproachfully, but she lets him push her into the cab. He gets in next to her. They come into Rome Airport. Millie walks behind David with a mistrustful expression. He joins a short queue in front of the check-in desks. Fishing in his pockets, he brings out their tickets.
Cheers.
Remember how I told you didn't need to tell me everything? I changed my mind.
He looks into her steady brown eyes, then drops his gaze.
What's in the backpack?
With a look of somber resignation, he pulls the backpack off his shoulder and unzips one of its many pockets. It's stuffed with banknotes. Millie gasps in surprise and looks him straight in the eye.
Where did you get that?
He hoists the backpack onto his shoulder and stands looking at her with a wretched expression.
I don't want to lie to you.
But you don't want to tell me the truth either.
I can't get on this flight with you, Millie. This is as far as we go together.
With tears brimming in their eyes, they look at each other in silent misery. Millie nods to herself and turns towards the check-in desk.
To Detroit?
Mm-hmm.
David stands watching her, and as a parting gesture sends her small suitcase rolling towards her. Back in Michigan, it's still dark.
Roland.
We lost him, sir.
How many did you send?
Two men.
I told you to send everybody.
Well, she said two would be enough, but they missed him. It's like you knew we were coming. We're searching the grid now.
Keep me informed. I'm taking a different tack.
Roland, at the wheel of his car, switches his headlights on full beam and parks near to William, who's tinkering with his truck engine.
William Rice?
Yeah?
IRS. Could we, go inside and talk? I don't have to ask. That's a courtesy.
So, what's this all about?
Your son, David.
William takes out a beer.
Why, is he in some kind of trouble or something?
This will go a lot swifter if you let me ask the questions. When's the last time you saw your son?
8 years ago.
8 years?
That's right.
What about friends? Anybody I can talk to?
He didn't have a whole lot of friends.
I'd like to talk to David's mother if I could.
Yeah, me too. If you find her, tell her I said hello.
That her?
Mary Rice. At least that was her name back then.
Roland, picking up a framed photo of David's mother, stiffens.
When's the last time you saw her?
She split when the kid turned five.
Five.
Haven't heard a word since. If I hear anything, I'll be sure to give you a holler.
William opens the front door. Roland closes it.
No, you.
No, I won't.
Roland gives him a long, dark look.
There's a special movie you can do on this new thing now. There's like, they've added this new control, and like, you just... If you just double-click it. See that? It's pretty sick.
Whoa.
David appears in Griffin's hideaway.
Still alive, are you?
He sees some grotesque sketches of Roland pinned to the wall, and the dead paladin's body on the floor.
What?
There's more of them?
Hundreds more. I'm tracking 10 right now. What do you care? There's lots more.
What about the rest?
What about the rest? Like I said, I hunt them.
So who are these guys?
I told you, they're paladins.
Yeah, you told me their name. You didn't tell me what they want.
That's pretty simple, isn't it? The one is dead. Didn't you figure that out yet?
Yeah, no, I got that much.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, do you mind just,
Why?
Because we can do whatever the hell we want. Now, can you please just...
David is blocking the TV screen.
Thanks. You really don't get it, do you? Paladins have been killing jumpers for years. Way back since medieval times. They're fanatics. Religious nutjobs, Inquisition, witch hunts, that was them. Look, they're smart.
They're fast, they're organized. No matter what, they'll kill anyone that gets in their way. Like your family, your friends, that little girlfriend you're traipsing around Rome with you. They're dead. All of them. Get used to it, it's just a matter of time. I'm gonna get some takeaway, do you want some?
David concentrates. Aboard her plane, Millie is looking miserable. Roland's pale raincoat and metallic case are outside William's house as David appears. He comes into the house and starts to look around. Tensing with apprehension, he walks towards William's sitting room. The TV is showing a cartoon. As he draws nearer, he finds William lying face down on the floor. He runs to him, turns him over, and buries his face in his dad's chest.
Somebody get some help!
He jumps with him into a hospital A&E.
Help!
Medics run over to him. David sits on the floor, rocking back and forth as they vainly try to save William's life. David, looking grief-stricken, pushes himself backwards along the floor and teleports to the local jail.
Mark!
Jesus Christ. What did you tell him?
Don't they know about Ann Arbor?
Stay the hell away from me!
Black guy, white hair. Was his name Roland?
Just answer the question, or I'll drop you off the top of Mount Everest, okay?
What?
What did you tell him?
I don't... What? Tell what?
I know you told him about home, all right? I know you told him about Ann Arbor. Did you tell him about Millie?
I told him everything.
Why? Why did you do that?
Why not?
God!
Who are you?
David charges at Mark and vanishes. He strides into Griffin's desert lair just as Griffin himself appears in a whoosh of water.
Where'd the paladin go?
Swimming.
Pacific?
No, actually Atlantic. Nice little shark fit around Cuba.
What do you think you're doing? Put that stuff back!
Actually, I need to borrow a few things.
Just stay away! From the wall! Cut your eyes out!
I need to find Roland.
No, you don't. No, you don't!
I only got 8 hours.
Eight hours?
There's a girl, her flight lands in 8 hours.
Maybe that stuff's gonna help you. That stuff's like 4 years old. Do you want me to jump you back to high school so you can learn something? I've been tracking him for 10 years. Look at this. Look.
He points to a scar on his neck.
You see this? Our first round in Nepal. You should see the one he gave me back in Prague. Forget it. Forget Roland. Don't waste your time. Just leave it to me.
David tries to compose his thoughts. Griffin crosses to a safe and takes a key from around his neck. David moves towards him.
Do you mind?
Look.
Little privacy here. You know, this is kind of my thing. Just, you know, turn around.
Yeah. I was thinking that if we do this together, we could get him.
What do you mean, like you and me?
Yeah.
Like we team up.
Yeah.
Look, I'm sorry, but I don't play well with others.
David rubs the back of his neck in agitation as Griffin, carrying a petrol canister, steps out into the blinding desert sunshine towards a generator vehicle under a camouflage net. David trudges after him.
Do me a favor, yeah? Don't be here when I get back. Find a rock, crawl under it, stay there.
Griffin tosses aside the emptied canister.
Joy Wu, brother. It's goodbye in Chinese.
Griffin embeds a knife into the camouflage net and vanishes. David comes towards it and peers into what looks like a transparent web of rippling energy and grips the knife. He finds himself in a Japanese kitchen. Pushing aside a bead curtain, he spots Griffin being chased by a Japanese couple. David steps out into a narrow back alley and walks towards a brightly lit main street full of traffic. Griffin, looking wet through, strides along the Tokyo subway. He glances behind him, walks on a bit, then sees David watching him from a distance. Griffin holds up his hands as if to say, "Why are you following me?" and walks on. David, glancing cautiously around, follows him up the subway steps.
You can't keep following me.
Actually, I'm the one person who can.
Yeah, lucky me.
They step out into a neon-lit Tokyo street full of people. David starts to gain on Griffin.
Why are you walking? I mean, I know Tokyo pretty well. I got a lot of jump sites here.
You know what? I like walking for a change. It makes me feel normal.
You, ever read Marvel Team Up?
Yeah, I read it. And?
Two superheroes joining forces for, like, a limited run.
You see, I see what you're trying to do, yeah? I'm not buying it. For your own sake, just go home.
You live in a cave.
It's called a lair. And what's the point?
Just saying, you know, we kind of have this common thing. And I know where to find Roland.
Griffin swallows and turns away. They both walk on, amid a stream of Japanese people scurrying across the road.
So we're doing this or what?
Griffin strides towards a car showroom and jumps, leaving David outside the Mercedes-Benz showroom. Inside the showroom, Griffin walks towards a sleek silver convertible. Outside, David looks up into the glare of a set of headlights. Griffin teleports the car through the showroom window, nearly running David over in the process. David picks himself up.
Sorry, clutch slack.
Real subtle.
Yeah, I'm not gonna get rid of you, am I?
David jumps to the passenger seat and they shoot off at breakneck speed along the city streets. Swerving past cars at an ever-increasing speed. David looks a little uncomfortable.
Whoa. Might want to hold on, son.
As they bear down on a young Japanese mother pushing her pram, the car jumps and reappears at superhuman speed. They jump to avoid other cars and land with a thump. Griffin checks his rearview mirror.
That's close.
Not bad.
This thing must be 2 tons easy. How are you,
If it moves, I can jump it. Actually, I knew this jumper once. Crazy bastard. Tried to hop a whole building. Won't be trying that again.
What's that?
It's because he's dead. Killed him. Still managed to shake it a little, though.
Griffin smiles in a matter-of-fact way at David, who looks distinctly uncomfortable.
So how long you been doing this for?
Doing what? Driving?
No, jumping.
Since I was 5.
5?
Yep.
How'd you keep it a secret from people? Like your parents?
It's pretty easy when they're not around.
Where were they?
Not around.
He grips the wheel tightly, and a haunted expression flashes across his face.
You know, my mom, she took off when I was 5. I know what it's like to not, you know. My dad, he...
Did I ask about your family? I mean, are we on Oprah here, or...?
David doesn't seem to get Griffin's sense of irony. They teleport to New York.
Griffin, I can't keep doing this. I gotta go. Her flight lands any second. I need an answer.
Griffin pulls up on the side of a road.
This is it, all right? Marvel team up, now or never.
A very limited run, right?
Save her, kill him, you know? We're done.
All right, Spud.
He vanishes.
Hey!
At Detroit Airport, David hurries to join Griffin in front of the arrivals board.
Hey.
The flight from Rome landed an hour ago.
Oh, no.
You didn't check on the flight.
Griffin gives David a patronizing look.
All right, well, we gotta find her, you know?
You go find her. I'm gonna arm up. Meet me back at the lair. Right?
Fine. Right.
David vanishes right in front of a little boy who gapes. Please come to
you looking at?
Griffin moves close to the boy. And he jumps. David jumps to the Ann Arbor bar where Millie was working.
I'm Millie's friend, David. She here.
Last I checked, she was with you. Hey, your friend came by.
What are you talking about?
Black eye, white hair. You just missed him.
David sprints out of the bar, running and jumping through the street. He comes to the outside of Millie's apartment building and punches a number on the entry phone. He listens to where the ringing is coming from, then jumps. He bursts into her flat and collides with a pot plant.
David, what the hell are you doing here?
I buzzed, but you didn't pick up.
So you just broke in?
Well, I needed to make sure that you were okay.
No, David, I'm not okay. I got left in an airport in Rome.
I'm sorry.
His reply doesn't seem to satisfy her.
You're sorry. Thank you.
She goes to the door.
I think you should leave.
Roland's car pulls up outside. David looks down through the blind on the window.
David, you need to leave.
Come on, fast food. We don't have much time.
What? What are you doing?
David,
I told you to leave. What?
I'm not in banking, okay?
No, really?
I mean, the money did come from a bank, you know.
Yeah.
A few banks, actually.
Are you telling me you're a bank robber?
It's a small part.
Roland's paladins run in.
Will you please get out of my house?
David jumps to a bookcase and picks up the globe. Minnie's jaw drops. David looks beseechingly into her eyes, willing her to understand. She nods numbly. And runs off, straight into his arms.
Millie, I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
I'm really sorry.
Just go.
We gotta go.
Just leave me alone.
Roland's on his way.
Come on. This might hurt a little bit, okay?
David grabs her, and they teleport.
It's okay. Millie, trust me, okay? Trust me. I'm not gonna hurt you.
Don't you even come near me.
Millie.
Near me.
Roland prowls around Millie's apartment.
I'm gonna explain this, all right? I'm gonna explain everything.
Roland sprays the jump scar with an aerosol.
In here.
Just stay where you are, all right? Stay right there.
David!
Hurry up, it's closing.
The paladins unlock their case and bring out a heavy machine. Roland presses a power button and it blasts energy at the jump scar. Griffin is digging a hole a few yards away from his lair.
Griffin! There's something I gotta tell you.
So where'd you find her?
This is something that's sort of gonna piss you off a little bit.
Piss me off.
David?
What is this?
David?
What's she doing here? This isn't some kind of clubhouse,
David,
you know.
What is going on?
Millie, I told you to stay inside.
Mount Everest.
That's what I was trying to tell you, okay?
Maybe the bottom? I don't know. It's up to you.
What?
Griffin, listen to me, all right? That's what I was trying to tell you, okay?
By bringing her down here, they can follow you. They have a machine. Can open wormholes and keep them open.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying they can follow us anywhere. And you brought her here.
Griffin jumps into his lair and watches Roland standing in front of the jump scar in Millie's apartment. Clouds of black smoke rise up from the roof of the apartment building.
There's two of you? David, what is going on?
Millie? Millie, stay right here.
No!
David jumps into the lair.
What have you done?
Griffin,
where does this thing go?
We gotta go.
David, what did you do?
They see a vortex of swirling energy and vanish, just as Roland and his crew come through the jump scar. Roland scans the empty lair with narrow, malevolent eyes. He clocks the many sketches of himself plastered across the wall of the lair, like most wanted posters. Griffin and David are hiding in a shadowy corner of the lair. Outside, in front of a wall of Egyptian carvings, Millie climbs towards the edge of a rocky ridge. Only to find barren desert as far as the eye can see.
Shit.
She turns back despondently, hiding in the shadows of the lair. David watches Roland studying the wall of photos and documents in front of him. On another wall, David spots a photo and drawings of his mother. Seeing more and more pictures, he starts to take deep, uncontrolled breaths.
Mom?
He steps forward and is caught by an electrified tether and pinned against a wall. Roland and the paladin zap him with electricity.
Thanks for leading me to your friend.
Wait! Why are you doing this to me? I never hurt you. I don't hurt anybody.
Not yet, but you will. Sooner or later, you all go bad.
What if I'm different?
Roland produces his deadly blade.
You're not different.
I'm different!
Griffin points a flamethrower at Roland, engulfing the lair in flame. Roland fires a line with his baton and whacks Griffin round the head. David tries to sever his ties with a cutting torch. Roland strides towards Griffin.
Time to send you home to mommy.
Griffin charges at him, carried by a powerful force field, and hurls himself and Roland out into the open. Roland shakes sand from his face and looks up to see Griffin throw aside a tarpaulin and jump onto a quad bike with an insolent grin on his face. Zooming past, he gives Roland the finger. As Griffin teleports to London on foot, Millie penetrates the lair.
David!
Millie!
David is still strapped to the wall. As Griffin looks round, a number 10 London bus thunders towards him and crashes into the desert with Griffin hanging onto it as if it were a windsurfer. The bus falls on its side, rolls over, and squashes Roland like a fly. In the lair, Millie can't believe what she's seeing. Outside, Roland struggles to his feet.
Millie, get out here. Run, okay? Millie, run!
Griffin appears with his flamethrower. Roland is hurled back into Millie's apartment in a ball of flame. A second salvo from Griffin sends one of the paladins flying out of Millie's window. From the street below, people run for cover. Wielding the flamethrower, Griffin surges towards the jump scar and lands at Millie's, where Roland is waiting for him. Griffin grabs a kitchen knife. Roland lassoes him by the neck and they both crash through a wall. Millie stands on a metal box and cuts David's bonds with a pair of giant clippers.
I'm only getting you down so you can get me out of here.
As he thuds to the ground, she whacks him round the head. He throws her a wounded look as he pulls the rest of the wires off him.
Can you take me now, please?
He looks into her beautiful but unrelenting brown eyes and nods his head in defeat.
Okay. I'll take you. I'll leave you alone.
A sad smile flickers across his bruised face.
It was always you, though. Ever since we were 5. It was always you.
Please just take me.
Millie looks him straight in the eye, her face implacable.
Take a deep breath.
Griffin nosedives to the floor next to them with a paladin machine.
I got him! I trapped him there! Without the machine, they're screwed!
A line shoots through the jump scar and wraps itself around Minnie's waist. She's hauled back to her apartment.
Scatter! Oh! Buddy. Wow. Crap, I didn't expect that. I didn't know.
Millie is unconscious.
Now they have to come to us.
Let's get these fires out.
Griffin presses buttons on a homemade bomb.
What's that? What? What are you doing? Nothing. I was, thinking about going bowling. What? What? Roland's in there with his whole army. I'm gonna go back there and end this. What do you think? Yeah, I'm gonna blow him the Timbuktu. Millie's in there. Well, yeah, there is that as well, but... I gotta go get her. Huh? Griffin, it's my fault that she's there, right? You can't just... What? We gotta get her out of there, right?
We have to get her out of here.
I can hear you. I'm not deaf. I understand what you're saying. I can actually hear.
All right. Well,
it's a crying shame. It really is. But you know what? We all have to make sacrifices once in a while. You know. Is it detonate?
Unless you're making any.
Hey, you know what? I made mine. Right? When I was 5. Came to my house and killed my parents.
David teleports with the safe that contains the bomb. Griffin sniggers to himself.
David.
He does a running jump. And joins David at the top of the Colosseum at night. He peers over the edge of a railing and sees that David's dumped the safe at the bottom of the arena. The two of them watch each other with narrowed eyes, and they both jump. Landing on top of the safe.
Look, before this gets out of hand, let's just talk about this.
They jump to the top of one of the Egyptian pyramids, and Griffin kicks the stuffing out of David.
How about this for talking, huh? Am I getting the message through here?
I can't let you do this.
Look, David, you touch a safe again, I'm gonna kill you. Have you got it?
The fight continues on an American road bridge.
Give me the detonator, David!
They jump like sand crabs in Dubai.
Give it back!
Sorry, Griffin!
And they're back in New York.
Give it back!
On the observation deck of the Empire State Building.
Don't.
David tosses the detonator over the side.
Bad move!
Griffin free falls after it. David jumps after him. They grapple in the air and plummet into a crowded swimming pool. Terrified children swim for safety. David teleports to the top of an iceberg. As he goes to throw the detonator into the sea below, he looks behind him and gulps. A truck comes plummeting out of the sky towards him, propelling him towards the sea. Driven by a little man with a moustache, it lands on a pile of dusty rubble, almost falling apart and scattering its cargo of crates. The passenger door falls off, and Griffin clambers out, ducking to avoid a crossfire of bullets. Tanks, armored cars, and soldiers wielding rifles mill around him as he searches for David. He finds the detonator in the rubble. With a triumphant grin, he limps across the battlefield towards David, who's writhing in agony.
Well then, brother. I guess our limited run's done.
David on the ground spots an electricity pylon in the distance. He lunges at Griffin and they teleport to the top of the pylon. He hurls Griffin against the iron structure and part of it starts to topple, trapping Griffin in one arm of it. David falls free and unhurt.
The old electricity trick. That's a nice move.
Thanks.
Cut me down and we can finish this, yeah?
You know, it didn't have to be this way.
There's 5 of them back there. You go back there alone, you're dead. You hear me? You can't win. Get me down, David. You do this alone, and you're dead. You're not a hero, David. You're a jumper. You don't save the girl. Don't you get it?
David, tossing the broken detonator from his pocket, jumps back to Minnie's place and is almost run down by a car. Jumping to the balcony, he peers in through the window and sees Minnie slumped against a wall. Slowly, she raises her head and sees him. He jumps in. A paladin fires a line at him. Roland secures a line across the room, zapping David with a bolt of electricity. As Roland comes towards him, his eyes glinting, David summons up his strength to jump, but he and Millie stay where they are.
Some things you can't jump, David!
David tries again, and a jagged crack appears in the floor as the wall of the apartment shakes. The glass globe rolls towards a hole in the floor. Roland gets to his feet.
Only God should have this power. Not you, David.
Again, David tries to teleport and fails.
David, I'm so sorry about what I said before.
Tears of frustration well in David's eyes, and a few feet away, Roland unsheaths his knife.
Take a deep breath.
As he comes towards them, he's thrown back by the power of David's will. And the whole side of the apartment block starts to crack. Roland Ireland watches in mute amazement as the whole apartment implodes and lands with a splash in the Ann Arbor Lake, sinking to the bottom like a wrecked ship. Roland flails about in the deep water, and David, losing consciousness, starts to sink amid a flurry of bubbles. Roland, hanging upside down, watches David fall out of his reach. Millie swims towards David and wraps her arms around him. The wrecked apartment implodes and in a tsunami of water crashes into the Ann Arbor Library. As Millie comes to, a no food or drink sign floats past her. Next to her on the floor, David lies motionless.
David? Hey. David? Oh, shit, I'm sorry.
Where are we?
I'm sorry. What's my dishwasher in the library?
As he sits up to try and shake off the tether, Roland appears out of the wreckage.
David!
David and Millie jump.
I'm impressed. Stay here, okay?
He jumps back to Roland.
I'm a long way from Robin Banks.
The two land in a cave. David leaps to his feet as Roland catches his breath.
I told you I'm different. Could have dropped you with the sharks.
With a cool shrug, he vanishes. Roland scrambles to his feet and hobbles to the lip of the cave. Straightening up, he looks out at the vast landscape before him and gives a wry nod of defeat. He's standing in the mouth of a cave high up on a rocky promontory with two deep gorges on either side of it, a river running through each gorge, miles and miles from anywhere. David, wearing his woolly hat and grey overcoat, walks over snowy grounds towards a luxurious white-painted property. As he steps towards the front door, he removes his woolly hat. A young woman with long dark brown hair and pale blue eyes and wearing jeans opens the door.
Can I help you?
David looks at her in puzzlement.
Is Mary here?
Hey, Mom.
Mary, wearing a smart pale gray outfit, comes to the door, her expression stiffening as she sees who it is.
Honey, why don't you wait upstairs?
Okay.
David steps inside.
You know, it wasn't easy finding you.
You shouldn't be here.
He watches his half-sister disappear upstairs.
So it's true. You're one of them?
Yes, it's true. You were 5 years old, your first jump. I only had two choices. Kill you, or leave you.
So you left?
To protect you.
I was 5.
I did what I had to do. I've never stopped thinking about you. Not even for one day.
David looks deeply into his mother's face with his soulful blue eyes.
So I'm a jumper. You're a paladin.
That's right.
What now?
I'm giving you a head start, son. Because I love you.
She hugs him.
Good luck.
She steps back from him, her eyes downcast. With a long last look at her, David goes out through the door. His mother's head is bowed as she closes the door behind him. He walks away from the house and starts to run towards a slender figure in a red coat and long white scarf, waiting for him in the snow.
Hey.
He walks up to Millie with a somber expression.
You okay?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, I am.
Good. Because I'm freezing. Can we please go someplace warm?
Where do you want to go?
Surprise.
They hold hands and jump, leaving a flurry of snow behind them. Casting by Joseph Middleton, CSA, costume designer Magali Guadashi, music supervisor Janine Jordan, music by John Powell. Visual effects supervisor Joel Hynek and Kevin Ena. Associate producer Simon Crane. Film editors Sal Klein, Don Zimmerman, ACE, Dean Zimmerman. Production designer Oliver Shaw. Director of photography Barry Peterson. Executive producers Stacey Mays, Kim Winter, Vince Garadis, Ralph Vigenanza. Based on the novel by Stephen Gould. Screenplay by David S. Goyer, Jim Alls, and Simon Kinberg. Produced by Arnie Milchan. Lucas Foster, Jay Saunders, Simon Kinberg. Directed by Doug Lyman. Unit Production Manager James Powers. Unit Production Manager David Coatsworth. First Assistant Director Kim Winter. Second Assistant Director Andrew Robinson. Second Assistant Director Heather Worcesterbarth. Stunt Coordinator Second Unit Director Simon Crane. Visual Effects Producer Ellen M. Summers. The cast. David Rice was played by Hayden Christensen. Griffin, Jamie Bell. Millie, Rachel Bilson. Mary Rice, Diane Lane. Roland, Samuel L. Jackson. William Rice, Michael Rooker. Young Minnie, Anna Sophia Robb. Young David, Max Hureau. Young Mark, Jesse James. Mr. Bowker, Tom Hulse. Sophie, Christian Stewart. Mark Cobalt, Teddy Dunn. Ellen, Barbara Garrick. Day Bank Manager, Michael Winter. Italian Desk Hop, Massimiliano Bazzaglia. Italian Bartender, Sean Roberts. English Beauty, Natalie Cox. Fiona, Meredith Henderson. Psychologist, Damia Andre. NYPD Detective Tony Napo. Owner of Minnie's Old House, George King, Bank Guard, Clark Beasley Jr., Italian Woman, Simona Lisi, Italian Detective, Matteo Carlomagno. Italian Police Officer 1, Fabrizio Bucci, Italian Police Officer 2, Giorgio Sant'Angelo, Italian Cabby 1, Marcello Santoni, Italian Cabby 2, Franco Salvatore Di Stefano. Coffee Shop Manager, Brad Borage, Doorman, Angelo Lopez, Bellhop, Roberto Antonelli, Italian Ticket Agent, Veronica Vicentin. Toby, Christian Pikes, Landlord, George Garley. Jungle Jumper, Rini Gito Uk. Kids in Detroit Airport, Francesca Hija, Robin Zenker. Angry Japanese Cook, Masahiro Kishibata. Japanese Chef's Wife, Sumiko Yamada. Japanese Chef's Daughter, Tamaki Mihara. Japanese Scientist, Mansuko Ikeuchi. Mexican Truck Driver, Rolando Alvarez Jacoman. London Pub Patron, Adam Chukrik. Houlihan's Bar Patrons, Jordan Gatto, Nicholas Kusiba, Ariel Lucane, Vanessa Reed, Stephen Whitehead. Surfers, Mahmoud Watts, Braden Manoffo, Tamara Buchwald, Maya Smith. Police Officer Valentino Vicentini. Lamplighter Clark, John Baker. Hospital aide, Josie Lau. Stunt Coordinator, Wade Eastwood. Songs, What Now, written by Ali Theodore, Zach Danzinger, Vincent Alfieri, Alana De Fonseca and Joseph Katsaros. Performed by No Standing. Tick Tick Boom, written by Randy Fitzsimmons, performed by The Hives. Lil King Kong, performed by Simple Kid, written by Kieran McFeely. Lay Down the Law, written by Matthew Bishop, performed by Switches. Lucky Girl, written by Scott Holiday, Thomas Flowers, Robin Everhart, Michael Miley, and David Cobb, performed by The Black Summer Crush. Rabbit Hole, written by Joshua Keith Ostrander and Greg Lyons, performed by Eastern Conference Champions. Ahead by a Century, written by Robert Baker, Gord Downey, Johnny Fay, Paul Langlois, and Robert Sinclair, performed by The Tragically Hip. Look After You, written by Joseph King and Isaac Slade, performed by The Fray. Mercury, written by Peter Oldroyd and Gary Scargill. Più Forte delle Bombe, written by P. Preston, S. Eduteri and M. Piluzzi, performed by and courtesy of Colle del Fomento. Happy Summer Wedding and Sexy Boy. Soyo Kazeni Yorisote, written by Tsunku, performed by Morning Musume. Stompbox, written by Daniel Arnold, Liam Black, Leon Harris, performed by Chemists. Move It Around, written by Ali Theodore, Zach Danzinger, Vincent Alfieri, Julian Davis, performed by X5. Who Does That, written by Ali Theodore, Mike Klein, and Julian Davis, performed by CMD. Know What You Want, written by Ali Theodore, Vincent Alfieri, Zach Danzinger, and Sheila Owens, performed by No Standing. Ladies and Gentlemen, performed by Saliva, Black and Blue Eyes, performed by Charlatans UK. Soundtrack on Lakeshore Records. Audio description by Veronica Hicks for IMS.